Take courage, turn the volume up. It's Labor Radio.
Cable Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Bonds Over Borders on Tuesday, August 27th at 6 p.m. at the Cleaners at Ace Hotel in Portland. Bonds Over Borders is a benefit for Innovation Law Lab, a Portland-based organization that works to increase legal access for immigrants at detention centers, both locally and around the country. There will be live stand-up sets from Adam Passy and Dan Weber, and live music by Pedro Queriega. Again, that's Bonds Over Borders on Tuesday, August 27th at 6 p.m. at the Cleaners at Ace Hotel, 403 Southwest 10th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kbu.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Prison Pipeline presents a unique perspective of the criminal justice system, addressing the root causes of crime and broadening understanding of the institution of incarceration.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? When everything goes wrong, you see some bad. But I'm just a soul whose intentions are good. Oh, Lord, please don't let me be misunderstood.
Welcome to Prison Pipeline. I'm your host, Isabel Sinclair, and today I'm here in the studio with Dawn Swan, a formerly incarcerated mother who spent about 6 months doing county time in jail in Umatilla County. So today we're here to talk about a little bit the impact of incarceration on motherhood, sort of as a continuation of a series that we did for Mother's Day, speaking about the rate of women who are incarcerated and how that's increasing and how that really impacts the family structure. So Dawn, if you'd just like to share a little bit, what was your experience like doing county time?
It definitely was life-changing. I think it was really traumatic. The last time I was in jail was in 2014. And, you know, I had overdosed in front of my daughter. She was 3 at the time. And so what had happened is they revived me and took me to the hospital, and there was a cop waiting outside of the emergency room, walking back and forth. It was a sliding door. There was no exits because I was looking for exits. And then after that, a nurse told me to get dressed, and I was arrested. And so it was definitely heartbreaking to come to that point in my life. You know, I'd had, you know, around 4.5 years sober, you know, was involved with the community. And then, you know, I ended up relapsing. It started out with alcohol, you know, Grey Goose vodka. You know, I was dealing with loneliness and, you know, isolating and different things. You know, I wanted to use again. And so I just acted on that desire to use. And it ended bad. You know, I hit a lot of bottoms in the, you know, in like a 3-hour period. You know, I had overdosed, been resuscitated, went to the hospital, went to jail. But I think for me, what hurt my heart the most is I lost my daughter that day. But she's here today. And yeah, and I'm doing good now.
We have Dawn's daughter in the studio, Deja. If you want to say hello.
Want to say hi?
Hello, I'm 8.
So Dawn, since you mentioned when you were in the hospital and overdosed, you lost your daughter. Are you willing to tell us a little bit what happened?
What happened? So after the relapse, you know, I had been using for 2.5 years. I did a lot of other drugs. I tried to stay away from heroin. I tried to control my using, and I was really careful about how much I did. You know, usually I would test it, you know, like 1,000 times out of 1, I would always test it to make sure, you know, the potency. But this morning, you know, I was regressing back into getting physical withdrawals. And so, you know, I wasn't feeling well, you know, called somebody, and I had $10, and it appeared to be a watered down hit. It was only 10 cc's. And the heroin I was doing was the black tar heroin. So the stronger it is, the blacker it is. And well, I had assumed, you know, he had given me, you know, a watered down hit that he had had. And I didn't test it that morning. So as soon as I did it, it was 10 o'clock in the morning. You know, I had already went to the store that morning before Deja woke up. My mom had watched her and went and got a beer. And so I did it and didn't test it. And within seconds, I knew I was in trouble. And there was that split second, you know, where I looked at the phone and made a decision not to call 911, knowing that I'm probably going to die in front of my daughter. And so I filled up a trash can full of vomit and laid down, and everything went black. And next thing you know, my eyes are open, and I see, it's on the Umatilla Reservation, so I see EMTs and non-Native American, and I look up, and they look like they're 15 feet tall. And they're just all staring down at me. And so, yeah, I knew, it happened so fast. You know, it's not something people plan, you know, for the most part. You know, that's not like what we want to do, you know, what I wanted to do. So it was definitely life-changing. You know, that was, it broke my heart. I cried a river of tears, and they just kept coming. I was on my knees. I was alone. And in that realization, you know, there's nothing in the world that could cover up the pain. But one thing that happened is, even in all the darkness, I couldn't forget the love for my daughter. Even in death, I had this awareness of my love for my kid. And so I was, that's something I don't think that dies.
That sounds absolutely heartbreaking.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Thank you for sharing.
Yeah.
When you woke up, do you remember what was running through your mind at that time?
When I woke up, I just looked around. I wanted to see where my daughter was. From what I was told, they didn't think they were going to be able to resuscitate me, where they were putting evidence markers and already setting everything up as a crime scene. They were looking through my phone, but I did wake up. And so I was upset. To be honest, my mind frame was distorted, you know, as you can imagine, from addiction and from, you know, everything else. And I was upset because they basically had resuscitated me to take me to jail. So I was mad, to be honest with you. I'm like, really? You guys are good. And I was almost insulted that you're going to charge me with the crime. First, I'm dead, and you guys are going to turn around and resuscitate me and then charge me with the crime. I was like, this is not a good deal. So, And that's how I seen how I perceived things at first. You know, in being in that state of mind, you know, I feel like life was against me, you know, a lot of times, and people were against me, and they didn't, you know, so it was definitely not reality, what I had believed or what I was doing was an escape.
In those moments after they resuscitated you and then arrested you, what happened to Deja?
She was taken away by Child Protective Services worker that showed up on the scene. And what I was told later on by the worker is that they took her to go eat McDonald's. And from what I know, she was taken to a Native American family. Without my knowledge, they wouldn't let me know where they took her. And I wasn't able to see her. They said, you can see her if you can give us a clean UA. But, you know, I was doing meth and alcohol and heroin every single day. And if I could get a hold of crack cocaine, I would have did that too. Because I was had some major problems, you know, and issues to overcome.
When you were in jail, were you allowed to have any contact with her?
No, since I hadn't been in jail for a couple of years, I was released. You know, what is it? I was released like within a couple days. So it definitely, I wanted to get back to her and I wanted to get sober, but I wasn't able to do it by myself. You know, I kept trying, like one day I would just drink, or one day I would just do meth. You know, or one day I would just do heroin, like, or maybe I just do two and not one, you know, drug. And so I tried and tried and it wasn't working. I wasn't able to just stop all, you know, everything on my own.
Looking back, what do you think would have helped you be able to recover and connect with your daughter again?
Having a detox where, you know, they had like a medically assisted treatment program, you know, where they were able to give us, you know, Suboxone or something to help with the withdrawals. The detox, you know, it's a small town, Pendleton, Oregon, outside of the Umatilla Reservation in northeastern Oregon. They didn't have anything to, you know, to help the heroin addicts in that area with withdrawals. And so that made it really hard, you know, to stay, because, you know, being sick and knowing that the only thing in the world that's going to make it better is another hit is definitely a driving force, you know, on why addicts go back out and use. And they gave me a choice, you know, and it's, you know, I did my best to make things right, you know, to stop, but it was, you know, it just wasn't working. You know, maybe if I was mandated to treatment sooner, or there was more interventions. The only intervention I had was a counselor, and she would call me every day, you know, and she'd be like, Dawn, you need to come on, you need to get ready to go to treatment, come on, you got to come meet with me, I want to set up a time for you to go to detox, come on, Don, I don't care if you're using, you know, just come over and talk to me. Come take a UA anyways. You know, come on. And she would like bug me to the point of annoyance. And I was like, every time, my phone would ring, I'd be like, ugh, she's calling, right? And she was consistent. And she pushed me. And she put all those things in place. Like, she had it set up to where I can go to a treatment in Portland, Oregon, you know, Hooper, Central City Concerns, Hooper Detox, where they do have, you know, a medical assisted program, you know, to treat heroin, you know, people that are having withdrawals, opiate withdrawals. And so that really made a difference. And definitely somebody that was, you know, that was my support, you know, and that really cared, you know, that one person that cared made a big difference too.
If you're just tuning in now, you're listening to Prison Pipeline on KBOO Portland. I'm your host, Isabel Sinclair, and I'm here today speaking with Dawn about her experience being incarcerated and reconnecting with her daughter. So, Dawn, I wanted to ask, clearly you're sitting here today, you look beautiful and healthy, and you have your daughter with you, who's now 8. And I remember you mentioned that she was 3 when you had overdosed and when you were arrested. So between then and now, what would you say brought you to this point? Like, how did you make it out? Because so many people don't.
Exactly. And, you know, there was a desire. You know, there was a desire way before I ever was able to get any kind of sobriety or to get, you know, to get treatment or take classes, you know, to deal with the underlying things that were kind of bringing me back into this criminal lifestyle, and, you know, where I was getting involved with the justice system and going to jail and having to report to POs and having to take UAs all the time. And all these things, you know, there's definitely important factors, you know, on why, you know, having the support and the desire and, you know, persevering, you know, having hope, having faith, you know, all those things are vital, you know, vital for the survival of a addict in early recovery that's going in and out of jail and doesn't know and that sometimes doesn't even know a new way of life. But I had a little taste of a good life, you know. For the most part, life was hell, you know. It was hell when I was awake, you know, and at night I'd have nightmares, you know, every night for the majority of my life. And so recovery was definitely something that showed me, you know, I can have something different. And so that was, even as far out of reach as it seemed, you know, working through everything and overcoming the barriers and overcoming all, you know, picking up the pieces and cleaning up all the wreckage, you know, trying to make things right, you know, going to all the court dates, taking all the UAs, you know, showing up at jobs and going and taking classes, you know, maybe going back to school, getting training so I can have more job skills to get a better job, you know, paying my bills, paying off debt from old fines. I mean, you know, it wasn't always easy. And at times, I think one of my biggest triggers was stress. And so it's really important for me to be able to, I think, you know, we all want to know that we're going to be okay. You know, we have to know we're going to be okay. Whatever the outcome is, we have to be in acceptance. Like, whatever our life looks like, whatever happens to us, whatever happens in our life that we don't necessarily agree with, that that we have a piece to be able to move forward.
What would you have to say to mothers who are currently incarcerated or to those that are struggling with addiction and have children?
What I would have to say is, you know, it's never too late. You know, it's never too late. It doesn't matter what we've done. You know, I don't believe we're defined by our mistakes. I've learned that, you know, from being in recovery, you know, that getting my power back, you know, because the addiction and being in jail and feeling so powerless, I've learned that that doesn't define us. Once we're empowered to create our own lives for ourselves and not be dictated on what other people tell us we can do, you know, because there's going to be plenty of people that are going to say, you're nobody. You're never going to be anything. That's all you're ever going to do is go to jail, or that you're just going to die an addict alone, you know, or, you know, you're not going to be able to go chase, you know, to go get the career of your dreams, or you're not going to be able to overcome this because they don't allow felons to do that. I mean, if I would have listened to all those people, I wouldn't be blazing the trail for other women like myself, you know, to create a way and to show them, you know, we are very strong women. We do persevere. We do love our kids. And I think that's also a misconception, you know, that, oh, they're out in their addiction and they're not taking care of their kids, or they have their kids and they're not feeding them, or they're neglecting them. I know I never stopped loving my kid. And so for me, you know, just know that that we can, you know, we can overcome, you know, the criminal justice system with all its flaws. We can be mothers to our kids, and we can make amends to them. You know, don't carry the guilt and the shame of, you know, being this horrible mother, you know, that, you know, at times a lot of people believe that we are. You know, it's definitely been a blessing, you know, to be able to be where I'm at today and to be able to you know, to help women that are incarcerated, and to you know, encourage them and to show them and that there's a better way.
So if you're willing to share, what are some of the things that you're doing now that helps you find that strength, that really, like, that's connecting for you?
Yes, definitely. So I've worked with women and that have been incarcerated. You know, I went into the jails and spoke with women. I've gotten recently renewed my certification as a recovery mentor, and you know, help transition, you know, women back out into the community in Washington County. I went to the state capitol and advocated for low-income families, and that was an amazing experience. I do presentation at WorkSource, the WorkSource Center in Beaverton, Oregon, you know, to encourage the career coaches to help people like us, you know, to give them a reason to keep going, you know, because a lot of times in this line of work that we do, you know, there's a lot of people that don't succeed, and it can be discouraging, but we meet them where they're at. So it's not necessarily based on, you know, that we're not successful. It's just based on where we're at that time. Down the line, you know, there might be higher success rates. I believe that. Don't get discouraged. I tell a lot of people, I say, you know, that say, wow, you know, I'm making mistakes, and, you know, oh, I relapsed again, or oh, I'm back in jail. And I say, you know what? You get it when you get it. You know, and that's okay. You know, the blessing in all of this is that, you know, we get another chance. you know, and it's definitely so if there's so many addicts that are in the criminal justice system and we're paying billions of dollars Oregon taxpayers every year, if addiction is a sickness, then a recovering addict is the antidote. I don't think there's anything, any weapon greater than us, you know, being on the front lines, in the trenches, you know, hands-on with people that are just like us going through the same struggles. And I think it's really important, you know, work. You know, I understand my role that I play today. And I pray a lot. You know, I stay inspired. You know, I listen to motivational speakers. I meditate. I stretch, which helps me let go of a lot of the pain, because I've, you know, held on to a lot of pain, you know, from everything I've been through. And I'm at a point in my life, you know, where I'm just really willing to heal wholeheartedly so I can help others heal.
Thank you.
Yeah.
We have a couple minutes left in the show, and I'm wondering if there's anything else that you'd like to add or anything that you think our listeners would do well to hear or to know.
Like to add? Happy Mother's Day, you know, to all the mothers, and you know, to anybody out there, you know, that's discouraged, you know, don't give up hope. You know, sometimes sometimes we just got to do the right thing. You know, if it's just staying sober for one more day, if it's paying for the things in the store instead of stealing them, if it's going the speed limit or just the little things, you know, just keep doing, you know, the next right thing. You know, that's all I try to do. And I know at times I'm tempted, but you know, we definitely can be able to make a choice, you know, when we have the support and when we're able to you know, become more stable in our lives. You know, we're very, very resilient people. And for what we go through, you know, being incarcerated and going, you know, addictions and you know, the mental aspects of it, you know, mental illness, like suffer from PTSD or bipolar or whatever, you know, we still can overcome. And be able to live, you know, lives where we don't have to be locked up anymore. We don't have to feel like we're out of control, you know, and feel like we have to use every day, you know, regardless of the consequences.
Deja, did you want to add anything? Okay, come on over.
Mommy said Happy Mother's Day. Oh, and also I made her a card yesterday, the day before that, and it says, I love you because you gave me life and you hoped the best for me and you gave me sister, and that's it. And then I drew a heart around on the bottom, Mother's Day.
Thank you, Deja.
Welcome.
And thank you, Dawn, for everything that you've shared with us today.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, thank you. Happy Mother's Day.
You've been listening to Prison Pipeline on KBOO Portland. Listen to this and previous Prison Pipeline programs at kboo.fm/prisonpipeline.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad,
Don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? When everything goes wrong, you see some bad. But I'm just a soul whose intentions are good. Oh, Lord, please don't let me be misunderstood.
You're listening to KBOO, Portland, Oregon, 90.7 FM.
Media Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Stephen Marley Babylon by Bus Tour on Friday, August 30th at 8 p.m. at the Roseland Theater in Portland. The second son of Bob and Rita Marley, eight-time Grammy-winning musician and producer Stephen Marley, will perform in Portland with DJ Sasha Pena, who will be opening the show. Again, that's Stephen Marley Babylon by Bus Tour on Friday, August 30th at 8 p.m. at the Roseland Theater, 8 Northwest 6th Avenue in Portland. This is a 21 and over event. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Feet to the Fire campaign and protest, Wednesday, August 28th at 11 a.m. at the Clackamas County Courthouse in Oregon City. The Feet to the Fire campaign is part of a national campaign started by Protect Our Stolen Treasures out of Detroit. This peaceful protest happens every month outside a different